This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you cannot have any. Because we actually literally did just eat it all.
Yes, guess what we're talking about. It's gyros.
Yes, there we go.
All right.
This episode, I can't remember where it came from, but I'm really glad that it arrived here at our doorstep because we just got to eat gyros for lunch.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I think I just realized that I would like get a gyro like once or twice a year and always really enjoy it. And we've never done it as an episode. And it's something I think many, many people enjoy on a regular basis.
Oh my God, that was fantastic.
Or any number of related sandwiches, but we're going to narrow it down.
Okay, now that I'm thinking about it, well, so I'm glad that we're doing this episode, not only because I just got to eat that, but also because I think I've tended to confuse gyros with like doner kebab or duna kebab, however you say it.
Yeah, I'm glad you're giving that a shot because I always just say doner kebab, which is definitely wrong.
And also a souvlaki. When I was trying to think about my memory lane here, I was getting myself all twisted around because if I just think about gyros, I think the last time I had gyros was like the day that Brandon and I moved into the duplex in Ballard that we moved into in the summer of 2006.
I remember that place.
My friend Keaton and her then boyfriend, now spouse, Mark, helped us move. And I remember Mark ran out to Georgia's Greek, which used to be on 85th and is now, I think, on Lake City Way.
Okay.
And got gyros. And I remember drinking like a Budweiser long neck.
Nice.
And gyros when we moved into this apartment. Ugh, yes.
Okay. So I don't remember for sure the first time I had one of these, but it would have been in high school, I think, because it would have been like a cheap sandwich that you could get near my high school. I don't remember having a lot of them in high school, but I'm sure I did. And then for sure, I remember getting them at the Aladdin Gyrosery on the Ave in when I was in college at UW in the early 2000s.
I think I used to eat a lot of falafel, which we've already done an episode on and which is not the same thing, but has some of the same ingredients minus the meat.
Right.
Plus other things. I think I used to have a falafel sandwich at some place called Aladdin or something.
Yeah, that's probably the same place. I think it's still open. I think it has moved locations maybe since the early 2000s, but was always considered like the best and cheapest gyro place on the Ave.
Okay. Well, so part of the reason that I got a little confused with memory lane is that so Ash and I went to Greece in 2018.
Yeah. Did you eat gyros or something similar?
No. Okay. I mean, well, we did have like lamb prepared in a way that is very, I mean, lamb that was really tender and in strips sort of, but that was served in a dish as part of a whole bunch of other like little dishes at a restaurant in Athens.
Sure.
But I'm not sure that it was prepared in the gyro way.
Okay. So I didn't even put on the agenda like what this is. So maybe we should talk about that before we get into the history, which is very complicated.
And then,
and Mr. Etymology.
And then maybe we can get back to this issue of the duna
kebab. Oh, we will, for
or whatever.
Sure.
Okay, I'm gonna just want to say right now, I know I'm butchering it, and I'm hoping to do better by the end of the episode.
Okay, so this is, I mean, I'm not sure how that's going to happen since I don't have a better pronunciation than you, but we'll give some like historical context.
Okay.
So we are talking about a sandwich, like, you know, often it's also available as like a Euro platter, but we're really talking about the sandwich here that consists of usually a mix of ground beef and lamb that has been carved off of a like rotating vertical rotisserie stack. Mm-hmm. And then put into a warmed or griddled pita with a set of fillings or toppings that usually consists of like tzatziki, lettuce, tomato, red onion, and that's usually about
cucumber.
It. Cucumber, yes. Yep.
So hold on. Is this thing, like, does it actually have origins in Greece, or is this thing like an Americanization of a dish from elsewhere?
I'm so glad you asked, because it's so much more complicated than that. So first off, gyros as a dish does exist in Greece, but as far as I could tell, is almost always made with pork rather than a mix of beef and lamb.
Interesting. Yes. What did you happen to note what part of Greece it's from?
No. And the other thing, and like, well, we'll jump around a little here, is that it seems that it became popular in Greece and North America at the same time. So this is not like a traditional Greek dish that came to North America after being enjoyed in Greece for hundreds of years. This is something that like found a home in multiple places and is based on a much earlier sandwich.
Okay.
Which is the Döner kebab.
You know, this has it reminds me of coronavirus.
Yeah.
COVID-19.
It's kind of like that, but considerably tasty.
Yeah, it popped up in multiple places at once. It has its origins in probably an older thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, man, where do we even go with this? I've got a whole Mr. Etymology segment.
I have no idea, but Matthew, you texted me ahead of time and you were like, wow, gyros are so fascinating. Like, just you wait. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to read the agenda. So I can't even help you with where to begin.
Okay.
You got to figure it out.
This dish originated in Turkey, or what is now Turkey, which then the Ottoman Empire. Probably.
So it didn't originate in
Greece. It did not originate in Greece or in North America. It was not, however, called gyros. We'll get into the word gyros in a minute. It originated as Döner kebab is probably what it was called.
Okay.
And it was like a hand-stacked vertical rotisserie of meat that would be carefully grilled, and then the charred and juicy edges carved off with like a scimitar and put into a warmed bread. And there used to be a wonderful Turkish sandwich place on Broadway many years ago called Bistro Antalya, mm-hmm. that served this kind of sandwich that was probably not super different from how it originated. So good.
I remember having a Döner kebab in Berlin.
Yes, that is the name that it goes by in Berlin. And then in Canada, it's called Donair, D-O-N-A-I-R.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like kind of like Conair.
Kind of like Conair. Yes, yes. But it's often served by
hairdryer.
Nicolas Cage. Oh, I think it's the movie Conair.
No, I was thinking about like hairdryers. Okay.
Yeah, it's a movie where Nicolas Cage found, it's a classic movie about business. Nicolas Cage founds a very successful hairdryer company, but then goes bald himself, and it's very ironic. Okay, so I have to find this photo. I should have put it in the agenda, but there is a photo taken in the Ottoman Empire in 1855 of a Döner kebab vendor that is amazing. Well, that's not how you spell it. It's time for everyone's favorite segment.
That's not how you spell it.
That's not how you spell it. Okay, here we go. Check this out.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
We'll link to this in the show notes. This is an incredible historical photo that looks like you would absolutely want to go to this food stand right now.
Oh, this is truly remarkable. Yeah, so we've got these people standing around a table, and you can absolutely see the meat stack on its rotisserie. And there appears to be like a raised, like maybe ring for gas cooking.
Yeah.
Would that have been a thing in the 1850s?
I don't, it wouldn't have been gas, but like, charcoal, maybe, or something. Oh,
that's right. There could be coals in
here. Yeah.
Okay.
But wow. Anyway, it looks
good.
This is
cool. Yeah. This is very cool.
The concept of this kind of sandwich, like, you know, stayed in that region for a long time and then quickly spread out after World War II and was introduced to Greece after World War II via immigrants from Turkey and the Middle East. Which I wrote on the agenda as the Middle Eats. So then the fast food gyro, like, you know, thinking of it as like you know, a quick, inexpensive convenience food, developed in Greece and the U.S. at approximately the same time in the early 70s. And
wait a minute. Yeah. So this like sandwich in the form that we just ate it. Is a really new invention.
And in the form that we ate it was developed by Greek immigrants to Chicago in the 1970s.
Okay. Oh, this is so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And before that, it really only sort of made its way out of Turkey after World War II with like waves of immigration.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is also very closely related to al pastor, as in tacos al pastor, as served in Mexico and many other places.
And in what way is it related?
Al pastor is a rotating meat stack, and they usually put a pineapple on top and carve off some of the meat and a little bit of the pineapple, put it in a tortilla.
Love this.
Absolutely a related sandwich.
Okay. Okay. So
Do not at us about whether a taco is a sandwich.
Yeah, no. Save that one for Dan Pashman.
Exactly.
Okay, wait, but hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so much more I want to talk about, but I feel like we need to talk about pronunciation.
Okay. So first off, I watched yesterday because I was curious about like what is the gyro meat, of course, and we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know like how do you say it? I watched this New York Times video about like how they make the gyro meat, and the person from the New York Times was saying gyro. And I did more research, and I'm like, gyro is a totally accepted pronunciation in North America for this. Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you see, like, you know, the Kronos Foods poster, it'll say pronounced gyros, and many people do, including me. Mm-hmm. But gyro is also very popular. And, like, enough so that, you know, this is an American sandwich that we're talking about, and I don't have any problem with people calling it a gyro.
Great. I mean, I guess it makes a lot of sense when I think about, like, Greek roots or the roots of words, right? Like gyro.
Oh, yeah, like gyroscope. That's,
yeah.
That's okay. Also a Greek sandwich. It just spins faster.
That's right.
And like you can like set it on the table and stands up by itself.
I broke my tooth once on one though. So you got to be really careful with
you. Oh, like you let it go and like.
No, I mean biting into a gyroscope.
Okay. I see. Sorry, I didn't yes and you there. We went to a toy store in Tokyo that specialized in tops, and spinning tops is hard. It made me feel really dumb.
Oh, wait a minute. There was an entire toy store specializing in tops?
Okay, it specialized really in two things. Tops and like paper mache animals with like bouncy necks.
I love this. Okay, so this is like the... Whenever I think of like the specialization of restaurants in Japan, I mean, there's so many great examples, but I always think of like an eel restaurant.
Yeah.
And this is the eel restaurant of toy stores.
It totally is. They had some of those tops, you know, the ones that you spin and then they like flip upside down and keep spinning.
Mm-hmm.
Like I could not make it do that. Other people were like, yeah, check this out. And I'm like,
Okay. But hold on. Are we going to talk about the pronunciation of Duna?
No, because I figured this was the Donner? Euro episode and I didn't look it up. Should we pause and like find a pronunciation guide? All right, let's do it. Google says American pronunciation Doner kebab, but let's see British pronunciation Dona kebab. How do you say it in Turkish? Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Doner kebab. Doner kebab.
Okay, what about with a German accent?
Okay, go for it.
That's the Turkish one.
I know. I want to play it again.
Okay. Well, so if the O, the long O, it's a diphthong, as in the words bone and rose.
Long O is a diphthong.
So that would be donor.
I feel like I want Lil Nas X to write a song because like the long O is a diphthong. I feel like it'd be really fun to hear him sing that.
Okay, so it seems like it would be reasonable to say like, could you do it again?
Doner kebab.
Doner kebab.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
That phrase might not come up again in the episode. We'll see. Okay, you ready for Mr. Etymology?
Yeah,
wasn't Mr. Etymology. That was Mr. Pronunciation.
Wait a minute, where's Mr.? Oh, here's Mr. Etymology.
I told you we were skipping around.
Oh, okay, wow, yeah. I'm so confused. Okay, go on.
Okay, so remember the tamale episode where we talked about how English speakers took the Spanish word tamales said, okay, that looks like a word tamale with an S on it, like we would pluralize something in English, and said, okay, we're going to make a new word tamale.
Right.
Right? Tamale. Okay. That process is called back formation.
Instead of tamal,
right,
which is what
tamal,
it was in
which
Spanish.
It is in Spanish. Okay. Right. Back formation happened to gyros also in a slightly different way.
Okay.
All right. The Greek word gyros is singular.
Okay.
So it is a singular word that refers to the rotation of the meat stack.
Okay.
That word started
the
to be...
The
gyroscope.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Go on.
And that word came to be used in Greece partially because of xenophobia, because Greek nationalists were like, we can't have our favorite sandwich be a Turkish word. Like, it has to be a Greek word. Let's call it gyros. So that was successful, apparently. And then when it became a popular food in America starting in the 70s, they're like, okay, gyros, obviously that's a plural word because it ends with an S. So one of them must be a gyro or gyro. And so that's where we get the singular. It's a back formation.
Okay. So, I'm going to have a gyro.
Yes. So, in Greece, you would say, I'm going to have a gyros. That whole phrase.
I used to get a little bit confused when people talked about, a hero sandwich.
I did, too.
I used to think that they were, pronouncing gyros in some way that I didn't understand.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Live with a soft G like in Spanish.
A hero is a sub sandwich on a different kind of roll.
I think it's just another name for one of many names for a sub sandwich.
Okay. Wow, we are covering a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of debunking of.
We are. Things were significantly bunked until we came along.
hero does not equal gyro.
Wait, I just realized that a few months ago, I took December's bunk bed and removed and recycled the top bunk.
You debunked it.
Yes, and never once at the time did I go around saying I'm going to debunk this bed, which seems like exactly the sort of thing I would say, right?
Yes.
Weird.
I can't believe you missed that opportunity. Okay.
Okay. So many people claim to have invented the American gyro sandwich, and we will talk about what sets the American version apart. And I don't want to get into this person said they invented it at this place, but one of these people was named John Garlic.
actual
garlic.
Love that guy.
All right. So the thing that sets the American gyro apart is that mystery meat.
Okay.
You know, it's clearly, some kind of very finely ground and compressed and seasoned meat substance that gets sliced off into pieces in your sandwich. So what is it? I certainly did not know the answer.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. When it first started out, presumably in the original Turkish version.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was a meat stack.
Right.
What would that have been?
So that would have been slices of some kind of tender meat that had been marinated or seasoned and hand stacked onto the rotisserie.
And so.
And there are definitely places that still do that.
I've definitely seen
that.
Is it still done that way in Greece, or in Greece is it ground as well?
That is a good question, and I don't know the answer. I think it is probably still done that way with pork in Greece.
Okay.
But Greek listeners in Greece or who have been to Greece and had a gyro there, let us know. Or a gyros.
And so in the States, though, what we think of as gyros, or what here we may call American gyro sandwich.
American gyro.
American gyro is almost always going to be made from a very finely ground meat stuff.
Yeah. Is that what that movie American Gigolo was about?
Exactly.
Okay. And that meat stack is most likely going to come from Kronos Foods, which was founded in Chicago in 1974.
Is that a food store that eats its own children?
Is that was Kronos a Titan?
Yes.
Yes. That's what it is.
Yeah. He was Zeus's father and the father of a whole bunch. And remember
his
wife was Rhea. And he kept eating his kids because I think
they looked so juicy.
Okay. Anyway,
when I see a baby,
she got really tricky, and she dressed up like a rock in swaddling clothes or something, and he swallowed it.
Oh, and then for some reason, like you did on the gyroscope.
That's right. For some reason, it made him vomit up all of his children, who were still whole in his belly.
Well, I mean, things were different. Things were better back then.
Stomach juices were
back
weaker.
Back then, a dad could things eat his children better. And didn't have to, like, you know, get or like indicted and stuff.
And he wouldn't hurt them at all. Like, they would emerge and they would still
that's right,
be
so they
like
could
the
eat
gods
them again
of Olympus.
Tomorrow.
Anyway, I think that's how the story goes. Please don't at me if it doesn't go like that. I'm just doing it from memory.
I found that very convincing. That's like an area of Greek mythology that I don't know very well.
Oh, that's so. Like basic Greek mythology. What's the part you do know well?
Basic Greek mythology is like the labors of Hercules.
Oh, I don't really know that.
Like, you know, he like cleaned some stables and then like kidnapped a dog. That's... I mean, this is correct.
I really?
Yes.
Oh, I only know about like I don't know, like the Minotaur, and I know some, I know a lot of stuff about Circe. Have you read the book Circe?
No, I think some people in my family have.
Okay.
So I still get credit.
Kronos Foods. So I'm sorry, I did not mean to slander Kronos Foods. I just was going on a little bit there.
This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on MasterClass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, MasterClass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to MasterClass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on MasterClass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are.
If you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to MasterClass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Kronos Foods, founded in Chicago, 1974, not founded by John Garlick, which is what I was really hoping I was going to say, is the world's largest manufacturer of Euro-related products. And you've most likely seen their posters at your local Euro place, like, you know, pronounced Euros. And like, here's a picture of a Euro, like at the place where you already just ordered one. Their most important product is Euro cones. And a Euro cone is a cone of meat. And they are sold frozen. Okay. They are made of raw, very finely ground and kind of semi-emulsified beef and lamb.
Okay.
Although the beef-lamb breakdown can vary, as we'll see, and with seasoned with salt and spices and formed into like a cone shape so you can load it right onto your rotisserie and get to slicing.
It sounds kind of yucky.
They are not very pretty when they come out of the packaging. They're available in sizes ranging from 10 pounds to 40 pounds.
Wow.
Have you ever bought one?
You could get like a 10 pounder like for a party at your house.
If you had a vertical rotisserie. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Which I do.
Have you seen those memes going around where somebody's like taking a microwave or like a sofa and put it on its side and then it looks like it has a face and says something?
No. Well, what I was are you just thinking, about? Oh. Is this on TikTok?
No, it showed up on Instagram. But hold on.
Okay,
I gotta
please,
find, okay.
Please show me because I can't even visualize what you mean, but I do want to see it. I'll do, while you're looking that up, I'll just like eat two or three of my kids.
Okay. This is one of my...
Oh, wow. This is so much better than I expected.
It's so good, okay. Right?
I don't think my microwave is... No, maybe it is. Yeah. I don't think my microwave doesn't have dials.
I was just thinking if you had like some sort of a like a special fancy like countertop rotisserie, mm-hmm. You could just turn it on its side.
Sure.
It might absolutely love it.
Or it might like drip weirdly.
Okay.
Okay. So you take your...
Doesn't that microwave look
it,
so happy?
It looks so happy. Yeah. It looks like... There's some like cartoon character that it looks like. Like maybe SpongeBob when he's happy or something.
No, I know what you mean.
Like it's, the Trix rabbit. I don't
there's
know.
There's something about it that also reminds me a little bit of Olaf the snowman.
That's probably what I was thinking of. Because, yeah, I was like what's like a starkly white cartoon character?
Okay.
So not all gyro cones are the same. You can order many different varieties from Kronos Foods.
Wow.
So some of them are premium, which is all beef. Okay. I don't know why that makes it premium.
Okay.
Halal.
Okay.
Helene, which is more lamb.
Okay.
Windy City, which seems to be like more beef, less lamb.
Okay.
And maybe like, I don't know, some sort of Chicago spicing. And Titan.
And this one will eat your children.
Will eat your children, like, if they don't eat it first. Yeah. And yeah, Titan is like their like super premium offering. I don't know what it is. I'm going to guess that at Alba Cha on Broadway. Oh, no. Molly's going to laugh till she cries. I recognize the signs. you're just thinking about Titans eating children. That's it.
Yeah, I like the idea of it'll eat your children if they don't eat it first. It's like a race.
That's
race
weird.
To like, the bottom.
I was just at the Euro place. That's what it said on the Kronos poster. Kronos, okay. It'll eat your children if they don't eat it first.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Can anybody order Euros cones?
I'm so glad you asked.
Or do you have to have like a business?
Oh, you have to have like a special license. I saw them for sale on Amazon this morning.
Oh, wow. Talk about a Christmas present.
They
wow.
are not cheap. Oh, at okay. least you're like, I think it probably costs significantly more to, well, okay, first of all, I'm sure it costs a hell of a lot more to order like one than like, you know, 30 because they have to be shipped frozen. Okay. And then you open the box and it eats your kids.
This is my favorite,
your
favorite bit.
That's good.
Okay.
I'm glad we finally found it after yeah, how many episodes? 625. That's 5/8 of 1,000.
Yeah, it is. Okay, hold on. So what is it then that makes one Euros place better than another?
Oh,
if they're
yeah.
all buying from the Titans.
Okay, so first off, like, I assume that you can do a better or worse job of like charring and slicing the meat off.
Okay.
But also then there's the other stuff. So like, you know, I think the pita and the sauce are the main things.
Yes.
And like, you know, if you have like some sort of special thing you put in there, that could go a long way. Like, I love it when there's some kind of pickle mm-hmm. in there.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, if your pita's got to be like well grilled, so it's hot and has, you know, like the edge should have like a little bit of crispiness to it,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the sauce, like, I feel like the sauce can like range in flavor intensity a lot, and I want like a flavorful sauce.
Okay, and by sauce we're talking tzatziki here.
Yes, which if you had like given me one of your classic tzatziki quizzes before I researched for this episode, I would have said that's that white stuff, and maybe it's like yogurt or tahini or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm surprised.
You knew what it was?
Well, I always think tzatziki, that is yogurt and cucumber.
Yep, that's it. So it's Greek yogurt, cucumber, garlic, salt, olive oil, herbs, and sometimes vinegar.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, and it's very refreshing on a gyro.
You could also have maybe does feta ever show up in there?
Yes, the place that I ordered this from Alba Cha on Broadway, which is where I usually get my gyros from, and they have like the regular gyro or the Alba Cha gyro, and I think the only difference is they put feta cheese on the Alba Cha gyro.
Ooh.
I'm not a big feta cheese fan, so I didn't get it, but okay. I'll get you that next time because it seems like you are.
Well, I do like feta.
I've also seen hummus on a gyro sandwich.
I don't think I'd want hummus.
I think that might be good.
Okay, how often do you eat these things?
So I will get them a couple times a year, and it's usually on Thursday night when I have my voice lesson with my voice teacher, Doug. And if Wife of the Show, Lori, is out at a play on that night, which she loves live theater and so often is out at a play. Mm-hmm. So then I will finish my lesson, which is right near the gyro place. I will go get a gyro, and then I will eat it while walking home because I like to live on the edge.
Wow.
And it's a messy sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever gotten like stains on your pants or things like that from your gyro?
Not so far. I've definitely gotten like stuff all over my face.
Yeah.
And so probably like, you know, sometimes you see like scary people in my neighborhood, and I think I'm one of those people on gyro night.
Yeah, for sure.
What's going on with that guy? Like, you know, his face, like,
and right. It seems like he forgot to take all his clown makeup off.
Exactly. That's right.
That's right. Wow. Yeah, okay.
In that movie about the scary clown, Quick Change. Possible I just came up with a joke that entertained me that not one single person in our fairly substantial audience is going to be down
quick
with.
Quick Change. I mean, I'm sitting here going, okay, Penny is to quick as that, Wise is to change.
Way more clever than I deserve credit for.
Oh, okay.
I believe Quick Change was a comedy heist movie featuring Bill Murray, who dressed up as a clown and robbed a bank from maybe like 1987. And I did see this movie and I think kind of liked it, but certainly haven't made an effort to see it again. And don't think I've thought about it since then.
Oh,
it's time for our favorite segment. That's not how you spell that. No, it's where... where I look something up during the episode. Abby, keep all of this in.
This episode is tight.
I'm not totally confident that I got the name of this. Look at that. Quick Change. 1990 film by Bill Murray. And here's the post. Bill Murray and Gina Davis. And he's dressed up as kind of a sad clown.
I feel like that is the least like memorable movie title ever. If you were like,
I just remembered it.
Well, I know. But Quick Change, I would be like... Fast Money, or
yeah, I know it's no Cement Garden or Titanic,
right?
But I worked for me.
Okay, all right. Wow, this episode was filled with learning.
Yeah, I'm so glad we got to eat. Like, can you imagine if we did this without eating one? Like no. Before, during, or after the episode, I would feel really upset.
I also can't believe, I tend to eat more than you do at a given sitting.
Yeah,
and
most
I'm
people do.
Very impressed that you ate that whole thing.
I usually make it to the bottom of the year. Well, okay, I'm not in pain, but also like I usually eat lunch earlier than this.
Oh, so you were extra hungry.
So I was a little extra hungry.
Okay. All right. Well, that was delicious. Thank you, Matthew.
Do we have any spilled mail?
We do. We have a letter from listener Tracy. May I read it?
Yes, please.
Hi, Molly and Matthew. I'm writing to say thank you, Matthew, for your definition of cran as a unit of measurement.
This would have been on the cranberries episode.
I was going to say, I don't remember this, but that's not unusual. Okay. When I went to summer camp in the San Juan Islands, shout out to Camp Norwester, we sang a song called The Final Trawl about a fishing boat's last fruitless sail.
I love the idea of like a bunch of kids, like modern American kids singing this song.
Okay, a key line was, but I fished a life lifetime, boy and man, and the final trawl scarcely makes a crayon.
Do you think that means he went out and fished and didn't catch any fish, only a boy and a man?
Okay, back to listener Tracy.
Yes, sorry.
I had assumed crayon meant a crown in British currency. Not so. Now I will never have to wonder about this word again, and I can imagine a meager catch of herring dumped out onto that ship's deck as unsatisfying as the load of junk Bubba and Forrest caught on their shrimp boat before that lucky storm in Forrest Gump. Yours, listener Tracy.
Thank you so much, listener Tracy.
Wow.
Wow, we solved like a lifelong mystery for listener Tracy.
But I've fished a lifetime, boy and man, and the final trawl scarcely makes a crayon.
Do you
this
think?
This is not a catchy song, but I've fished a lifetime, boy and man, and the final trawl scarcely makes a crayon. That's hard to say.
Do you think that any of the kids asked their teacher, like, what the fuck is a crayon? And the teacher had to make something up because they certainly didn't know either? I mean, I guess they probably said it was a crown.
Yeah, probably.
I would have been, like, the annoying kid, like, I'm raising my hand.
Makes
like,
a crayon?
What's a crayon?
Wow. Talk about learning.
I need to go get the...
The book?
No. Okay. If I can't find the book, which was literally just over there...
Are you going to scream?
I'm
going to
scream, yeah.
Do you remember... You said that something we were talking about, the sound of a train coming down the tracks, and it was like,
I definitely remember using that as a punchline because it's one of the best things. Anyway, it's really the best thing Axl Rose ever did.
Okay.
That's when he saved all that people, all those people from that oncoming train. It's like, hey, you guys, shut it, knees. And they all ran. Yeah. Okay. So, okay, ask me if I have a downward wow.
Matthew, do you have a now but wow?
I do. My Now But Wow is a book. It is called Chinese Menu, The History, Myths, and Legends Behind Your Favorite Foods by Grace Lin, who is a author of many wonderful and prize-winning books. And her new book is like, it's a big illustrated book about Chinese menus and like the history of Chinese dishes through, you know, she is someone who is an expert on Chinese myths and legends and works that in along with like the real world history of these dishes.
I saw this cover in my neighborhood bookstore a couple weeks ago. It was so eye-catching.
It is a fascinating book because it is not a cookbook. It is kind of equally for children and adults, mm-hmm, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine like her editor must have like, or publisher must have like not made her life easy when she said this is the book she wanted to write.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad she got to do it because it is a marvelous book that's beautifully illustrated by the author and just like helps you understand like the context of some of probably your favorite foods a lot better in a very moving way.
Wow. What an endorsement. So that's Chinese Menu by Grace
Lin.
And
it's also fun. I don't want to make it sound like it's like deadly serious. Like it's a very fun book.
And I can tell that from the cover.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, our producer, Abby Circatella, has her work cut out for her.
Indeed. No, we told her don't cut a thing.
Oh, that's right.
Leave all the Googling in. Molly has a newsletter called I've Got a Feeling, which I was going to say I just sang that song at karaoke in Japan. Not true. I sang Don't Let Me Down.
Oh, God. That must have been so fun.
I've Got a Feeling. Too hard.
I have a feeling.
Anyway, that's a great newsletter, mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
And Matthew writes music and is an excellent singer and musician. He plays as part of two bands. One is called Early to the Airport. The other is called Twilight Diners. And you can find both of them everywhere you find music.
By the time you listen to this, I hope I will have finished my vocals for the second Early to the Airport EP. That is my goal. Writing and singing songs is hard.
Of course it is. You can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can check in with other Spilled Milk listeners at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com, where you can find out that what, like, whether they've been to Greece and, like, how many of their kids they ate, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to this show where, wow, the final trawl.
This is the final trawl. And, like, you know, by the time Abby cuts out all the Googling, this episode will barely make a cram.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Sorry, I just took a drink of water and then tried to talk through it, which is, as everyone knows, is the right way to pronounce water.
Why did I take my headphones off to look something up?
I have no idea.
Google says, I did it again. I took my headphones off again for no reason.
This is a fascinating part of the show, just when we sit here in silence.
Yeah, Abby, leave all of this in.